but they are both tethered in terms of the processes. We've circulated the document for members to ensure that they read the document in advance, so that when such presentation is made, at least we're familiar with the issues that are coming out of the report. As you will know, that as a portfolio committee for quite a while, one of the issues we have been requesting a briefing on and a discussion on was the SAMAC and all the related matters of SAMAC. And I think that's actually the subject matter today. We have the DG, Dr. Nomonde Kudu, and the entire team will actually be taking us through the submission. As is normal the case, we'll allow the DG to make this presentation and his team, and thereafter, we then open for discussion and questions. May I then hand over to the DG?
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. We, as the Chairperson has said, I am accompanied by my colleagues, Dr. Nomonde Kundu, who is the Chief Director responsible for HIV and AIDS in the Department of Health, and Ms. Makokole Nene, who is responsible for the SANAC Secretariat in the Department of Health at the moment. And I'm sure members know our parliamentary office too. Those are the people that are accompanying me together with the Dombulelo there at the corner, dealing with the machines who works in the DG's office at the moment. Our brief this morning is to do a progress report on SANAC and the NSP implementation in relation to that SANAC. And so, as the Chair has said, we're not getting into the details of the plan itself. The purpose here is to look at progress with regard to how SANAC relates to the National Strategic Plan implementation. And therefore, in terms of the outline of our presentation, we'll cover those items that are shown there. Our purpose is to give an overview of progress made with regards to SANAC since it was launched, and with regards to also SANAC since the endorsement of the National Strategic Plan. We take it that members were actually briefed when we talked about the strategic plan of the department this year, about the intention to review SANAC and to restructure it. So by way of background, SANAC was formed in 2000, just to remind members, which as a replacement of a structure that had been formed called the Interministerial Committee on AIDS under the leadership of the then Deputy President, who is currently the President of the country. This was at that time, the Interministerial Committee was the first high-level political body that provided guidance, leadership, and political oversight on HIV and AIDS. Now, between 2000 and 2006, SANAC operated with a whole range of difficulties, particularly the need to clarify its mandate and participation, etc., etc. So,
at the beginning of late 2005, March 2006, a review was undertaken of SANAC as a structure by SANAC itself, looking at what was the problem in the case of structure, etc., etc. And therefore, in 2006, it was restructured into a three-tier
structure that would improve efficiency of that structure. So the new SANAC structure, just to remind members, because we did also indicate before how the structure was actually given, consists of what could be termed the high-level committee of SANAC, which consists of the leadership of all sectors of our country coming together at that highest level. The resolution of SANAC has suggested that the representation should be none other than the chairperson or the president of any one of those sectors. So from the government side, the deputy president of the country was actually leading the government delegation, and therefore the chair of SANAC as a whole. And each one of the almost 17 or 18 sectors of SANAC was supposed to then elect some kind of a chairperson or president that would then represent them. That's the high-level structure. And then under that structure would be what we call a program implementation committee. That would actually consist of people who are dealing with programs from those particular sectors. So each sector, again, at the program implementation committee would be represented by an individual who was responsible for the programs of that sector in relation to HIV and AIDS. And that structure, from a government point of view, would be shared by the co-chairs of the social cluster of the Forum of South African Directors General. And that is the Director General of Social Development and myself as the Director General of Health. And then on the side parallel to that, we established sectoral committees. And these were not exhaustive. They would be established as need arose. But we started with those sectors that we thought were priority sectors in relation to the challenge of HIV and AIDS. The mining sector, the education sector, the transport sector, the agricultural sector, among others, and the public sector in particular. So those sectors would constitute partnerships also, in other words, multi-sectoral committees that would coordinate the activities of HIV and AIDS in those sectors and link up with the program implementation committee. Now, I have more or less alluded to the issue of membership of SANAC by saying that at the highest level, the idea was that people would be represented by members that would represent those sectors. Now, you'll recall that in each of these sectors, there are many organizations. If you take the labor sector, for example, there are three plus one major unions that are actually supposed to represent labor. But the idea was not that they would actually come and each one of them bring their president, but that they would come together and then come up with a representation at SANAC level. So when the new SANAC was launched, there was a problem in that not all civil society sectors were represented. In other words, even though there had been an agreement on the 18 sectors, not all of them had actually reached a point where they had appointed representatives into SANAC. Others had not even met to do so. Others had met in the interim. Others were still trying to pull together everybody so that they would be inclusive. And so what has happened since then has been that we have supported some of these sectors to convene a whole range of sectoral summits to elect their representatives so that the council would be fully constituted before it actually meets. And now we have covered all sorts of sectors, from youth to traditional healers, traditional leaders, to women, to children's sector, etc., etc. All of them have now been covered, and therefore all of them have actually appointed representatives. Even those that at the launch of SANAC had only appointed interim representatives have now more or less confirmed their final representation. And therefore the structure at the highest level is now complete. And the intention is for that structure then to meet for the first time in its completeness on the 10th of September this month. To discuss finally the program of action. Now, with regard to membership, just to give a sense of who are represented in SANAC, from the government side, it was decided that The ministers who constitute the Interministerial Committee on HIV and AIDS be the ones that represent government in SANAC. And therefore, these are ministers from education, health, social development, correctional services, minerals and energy, public service and administration, and transport. And of course, there has been co-option of one or two ministers because of their past involvement, such as the Minister for Public Works, for example, who, because of her involvement in SANAC as a result of agriculture before and land affairs, is being co-opted. But so that is the representation that would be representing government at the level of SANAC. And therefore, similarly, in the program committee, you would have the same kind of representation. Now, with regards to the government sector, sorry, the non-governmental organizations, these are the sectors, as listed there, that would be represented in SANAC. It's business, people living with AIDS, and just to say that initially, SANAC agreed that that representation would, for a start, be separated between the TAC and NAPWA, but that the mandate that has been given at, I think, the COSATU Congress, that the Deputy President, together with the COSATU leadership, should try and facilitate unity between these two organizations, should be carried out such that eventually representation would be, like all other sectors, just the sectoral representation rather than organizational at that stage. And so there's labor, the religious sector, the NGO, CBO sector, traditional leaders, etc., etc. All of them are listed there. And of course, that there was a lot of motivation as to why this sector, why that sector, etc., etc., until that was actually approved. SANAC is meant to meet twice annually. That is, the highest level body is meant to meet twice annually. Of course, we haven't counted the launch meeting as the meeting of SANAC. So as I said, the first, which is actually maybe supposed to be the earlier in the year, but because we started delayed, the first meeting of SANAC will take place on the 10th of September. And then the idea was that the annually it would meet early February, March, so that it would actually prepare the program of action for the year, and then towards the end of the year to evaluate whether the program implementation committee has actually done its work. But in between, it could be called from time to time. Now, this particular meeting is supposed to consider progress with regard to what sectors have done to prepare their plans for the implementation of the National Strategic Plan, because that's the first brief that all sectors were asked to do, and also to look at how to deal with coordination of donor support for sectoral activities. So in other words, when these sectors have developed their plans, how does SANAC actually ensure that support for the NSP is coordinated so that we don't all go to the same donors for the same kind of activity. And then thirdly, to adopt an M&E framework for the work of SANAC and therefore the NSP. So that's with regard to the high-level meeting. It will be a meeting for that purpose. And in order to prepare for that, the Program Implementation Committee, as I outlined it, met recently to chart the way forward and, of course, decided to finally meet in its fullest form on the 27th of August, that's next Monday, to discuss the very issues that are going to SANAC. For example, to confirm the terms of reference of the Program Implementation Committee itself, to constitute the various technical task teams of that committee because they have not been formalized, and then to consider the items that are going to SANAC. For example, what sectors are ready with what implementation plans, and what is the state of readiness, and what is the proposal on the M&E and processes, and then to agree on a process for the compilation of the 2008, UNGAS report. You will recall that annually we have to submit a report to the United Nations on the implementation of the program around HIV and AIDS. This is a special sitting. So that is supposed to be a multi-sectoral report that is endorsed by not government but by everybody. And so SANAC is the best body for that multi-sectoral engagement. So we are now talking about what proposals we will make to SANAC in relation to the process of developing the UNGAC report. That's going to be considered and proposed. And then other issues that may actually have a policy implication. Now this committee, by its nature, is supposed to meet at least four times a year. In other words, it's a committee where real issues of implementation are dealt with, not at a broad strategic level. And then that committee accounts to the high-level committee that I talked about. Now, what I said also was that there are sectoral committees, and the sectors are already in the process of establishing those. Some have had them for a long time. For example, the mining sector, already had a program which was involving labor, government, and business in the mining sector. Now that relates to the progress report with regards to SANAC and its structures. In other words, what we are saying is that we are in the process of really building the structures that were agreed upon by SANAC when it was launched, and the first real meeting of SANAC as a structure will take place on the 10th of August. Now, linked to this is the issue of the SANAC Trust, which I think has been a subject of discussion before in this committee and in the Auditor General's report. Just to remind members that the trust was established mainly to ensure that they secure funding for the council and to facilitate the promotion and the execution of the work of SANAC. The reason why a trust of this nature was indeed established was in order for the trust to be able to raise funds, because any funds that come into government would have to go into the fiscal. So in order to avoid that kind of thing, you needed an independent trust that would then facilitate the funding. Government would contribute its contribution to the funding of the activities of SANAC, but there are other donors that would want to contribute to SANAC. So you needed a trust of that nature. So obviously, as we had said before, if SANAC was dysfunctional, the trust would be dysfunctional, because the trust was primarily for funding the activities of SANAC. And so that is why in the previous report of the Auditor General, first of all, there was the issue of the fact that we had staff, but there were no activities. And we did explain that because SANAC was actually dysfunctional, the activities of SANAC could not be conducted by the Secretariat. So since SANAC took a decision to conduct a review, a decision was therefore undertaken to support the SANAC activities, the revised SANAC activities. And that the task, therefore, would await the outcome of that process of the review. At some point, the trustees of that trust, the Board of Trustees, had met prior to that to decide that given the challenges that we're having, wouldn't it be better to actually ramp up that trust so that we actually don't find ourselves keeping funds but we are not using them. But then when it became clear that SANAC was reviving in its fullest form, then the Board of Trustees decided that it was better to wait so that we can actually then see what happens in that process of the review. So now that particular process has taken place, and there are all sorts of programs and plans that are coming from stakeholders, the trust is now ready and geared to assist. In fact, the department has taken for the time being the work of the trust in relation to supporting the various sectors. As I've said, we have been running and coordinating all sorts of sectoral meetings, children, women, youth, etc., etc. Those activities would have been the responsibility of the trust eventually, but we took it upon ourselves to ensure that at least to kick-start that process would continue. So, in other words, the fast is now geared for that purpose. And in fact, we have a line of donors that are supposed to be meeting with the Board of Trustees as well as the leadership of SANAC to discuss the resourcing of SANAC. What we left out in the structures of SANAC, which I think is not in your presentation, just to remind members, is that initially SANAC was also responsible for the Global Fund as a country focal point for the Global Fund. The decision that was taken was that indeed SANAC could remain an overseer of that responsibility, but a separate committee which is supposed to be what is called the National Resource Mobilization Committee, would be under the chairpersonship of the Minister of Health, would actually then be tasked with the responsibility to do work in relation to the Global Fund. And that committee has met once to look at the proposals that are related to our input to the Global Fund for the cycle that is actually coming around. But that committee would also then act as a committee for resource mobilization in general, not just from the Global Fund. And therefore, that committee would actually be linked in its work to the trust. Now, thirdly, the issue of the Secretariat of SANAC. Because of the need for us to strengthen the Secretariat as a result of the review and the new mandate of SANAC, we have actually done some restructuring in the Department of Health, in which we are more or less separating the current HIV and AIDS structure or cluster or chief directorate into two components. One component, which would be a chief directorate that would be responsible for partnerships and the SANAC secretariat, and the one responsible for policy and the comprehensive plan program, which is our responsibility in the Department of Health. And therefore the head of the Secretariat of SANAC would actually be a chief director level. And that post will be advertised, I think, in the next Sunday newspaper. We just missed the last one. But that post will be advertised in the next Sunday newspaper. We still have to choose which one, but in the next Sunday newspaper, for purposes of ensuring that we reach South Africans who are interested in that post. Now, okay, as we said, SANAC is primarily, its program of action is primarily the coordination of the implementation of the national strategic plan by various sectors. So that the details of the plans by various sectors would be a separate discussion. But here, from a process point of view of coordination, we're just reflecting very briefly on that. Just briefly in relation to the NSP, just to remind, that slide would remind the members of what it's all about. But the sectors have responsibilities. So from a SANAC point of view, from a secretariat point of view, our report is to say that from the government sector side, we believe that the government sector is now well organized to discharge its responsibilities. The Department of Health has facilitated meetings of the government departments to discuss the program of action and to map out how these departments are going to work. And all of them have engaged the NSP in relation to what needs to be done by each department. And therefore, they are finalizing their implementation plans, which are both about internal work plans, as workplace programs, as well as external programs. The first meeting, of course, to discuss these work plans was held on the 29th of June, and the follow-up meeting was held just yesterday to further unpack the plan. This is, as I said, in preparation for the meeting of the 10th, where then the government, as a sector, will then present to SANAC its implementation plan in relation to NSP, like other sectors, all other sectors. But government here would actually only select certain departments. For example, I think education would make a presentation to the Department of Education, the public service and correctional services are the three departments that we've targeted for a start. I think minerals and energy also, four of them for a start, because they are the departments that are responsible for the sectoral structures which are already established. That's why we prioritize them, so that SANAC adopts their implementation plan in relation to those sectors. Other departments will come later, and the government as a whole. Now, there's also the element of communication, but here there's a committee of SANAC which was formed between civil society and government communication in relation to the build-up to the launch of SANAC. We are anticipating that it's one of the subcommittees that will be established in the program implementation committee. From a government point of view, the progress is actually given chair that the coordination between the GCIS, our GAF units, and as well as the other communication sections of the department, all of those have been integrated and set in motion. And the commandery tender, as you know, is now up and running, and the campaign is actually moving. Now, with regards to M&E and costing, on the M&E side, there's already a multi-sectoral team of experts, and these are not experts of government, but experts in the area of M&E, that are actually looking at the M&E framework. Again, it's for adoption at the SANAC meeting on the 10th. The first draft has been produced, and we are hoping that the consultation workshop of the 3rd of September on M&E, stakeholder consultation workshop, will actually then finalize for purposes of putting in front of SANAC on the 10th of September. With regard to civil society, sectors are at various stages in the development of their implementation plans. We have a standardized format for implementation plans and reporting which has been given to all sectors. And of course, we have also offered technical assistance from the Department of Health and the SANAC Secretariat to assist in the development of those business plans. And as I said, most of these sectors are ready to present to the implementation committee on the 27th in preparation for the meeting of the 10th. Now, these plans, for example, I think we have two or three that have already indicated their readiness for that purpose, and that's the disability sector, labor, and the health professionals. But the others are still also going to be coming, because all of them are preparing for the 27th of September. So in a nutshell, the structures are gelling up. The business plan development phase is now coming to a finality in terms of where we are going to be getting the report from the various sectors on their implementation plan. The costing of the NSP, we are more or less finalizing that for SANAC. In terms of costing the implementation plans of each of these sectors. There are, of course, some challenges which we've faced in this regard. Two among them that we want to highlight is, of course, the delays in the preparation by the sectors themselves of the implementation plans, because part of the program of timing the next meeting of SANAC was actually informed by the extent to which all sectors have elected their people and all sectors have developed some implementation plans. That has delayed a little bit, but I think we are overcoming that challenge now because most of these sectors. But I think it's related to the second one, the issue of capacity. I mean, we are pulling together all sorts of sectors with such force to begin to work in a disciplined way to produce implementation plans around the National Strategic Plan so that each sector can clearly say this is what we are going to do, and that be sort of like written and understood by everybody. We haven't done that kind of thing before. Usually it's government that is supposed to be producing a business plan and accounting on what it is doing, but this Tanakh is actually saying everybody is Tanakh, and everybody therefore is accountable for the implementation of the program of action of Tanakh. Now, capacity to develop these plans and as well as to ensure that we have a clear monitoring of an evaluation framework is a bigger challenge because, of course, we don't have that much capacity in the country. So that's the progress report of the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Gigi, for your presentation. Honorable members, we open for discussion. If any questions? Honorable Majumise.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Gigi, for this presentation. I just want to find out from page 4 of your presentation, bullet 1, bullet 2 on the first thing. To explain to me what UNGA stands for. And also to tell us, after the SANAC was launched at the beginning of this year, I think it was April or March this year, no implementation has taken place so far. Can you explain to us what are the dynamics there for? And on page 6, the last bullet on the second slide, to outline to us what the activities will be for the communities. Can you outline the activities that will take place at the community level on the last bullet that you mentioned that there is a campaign that will take place into the activities of community level. What activities are those?
Thank you very much. UNGAS means United Nations General Assembly. Special session.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Waters.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to ask with regards to page 3, the first slide, where you said we've supported some sectors to convene elections to elect representatives. Who funded that and at what cost? And then also, as far as the Global Fund is concerned, you said the minister heads it. How many people serve on the Global Fund and who appointed them to the Global Fund? And if you could just explain what the process is, if who decides whether or not you actually accept any donations? Is it up to the minister unilaterally, or does she have to convene a meeting? And, you know, obviously get consensus. So if you could just explain that process. And then, what impact or influence, if any, will the sacking of the Deputy Minister have on the National Strategic Plan, do you foresee, if any? And also, will Dr. Normende Edifundu, who heads the AIDS program, will she be remaining in her position? Thank you. I hope I pronounced your name right.
We allow you, TJ, to answer the question. I'm not sure the relevance of the question on Dr. Sundu. She's there sitting in front of you. No more on the Sundu. She's laughing in the lipstick. I'm very serious. Sometimes I think one gets worried with the tangential issues raised, not relevant to the subject matter. But I'll come in on some of these issues. Thank you very much. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. I think the first question has been answered by the Chair. UNGAS is actually the special session that was called by the United Nations General Assembly on the Saturday, and then it has been called UNGAS since then. And there was a declaration. In fact, there was the recent one was last year, I think. The General Assembly again met last year to look at progress. And that's where there was a decision to get countries to add them, to develop targets and to all sorts of things like that. The things that we're doing here come from also that General Assembly. So that's the one thing. Now, Honorable, there has been implementation since March. What I've been outlining has been the implementation, because what TALAC did first was to decide on how it structures itself. And then the first structure, the high-level structure, was launched. And then it said between then, in March, and the time it meets, two things must happen. One is the various other structures that are actually agreed upon must be established. And I've talked about them, the program implementation structure is where it is now. And then secondly, all sectors must develop business plans for the national strategic plan, so that by the time the high-level structure meets, it needs to adopt those. So the program of action has been, between now and the meeting of the 10th of September, around ensuring that structures are actually properly constituted, and around ensuring that all sectors are developing these implementation plans. That's the implementation of the program of SANA. Now, as the chair said, it doesn't mean that as a result of that, the national strategic plan implementation has not happened. But we can talk about that at a separate occasion, the implementation of the national strategic plan, because that is a more involved subject. You know, prevention, care, treatment, all those areas, research, work is ongoing in relation to that. But this is in relation to SANAC and how it eventually is in itself. Now, with regards to activities around Komanani and community level, again, I think it's a very elaborate subject, you know, that Komanani is structured such that we had called for not just the TV ads and stuff like that, but work in the community. And so the previous one has started a whole range of activities in the community relating to education of the community, prevention, care, etc., etc. They had groups, young people that were actually working also in youth-friendly clinics, etc., etc. So it's a whole range of community activities that have been taken over by the new people that are actually on this matter. And again, it's a subject that perhaps may take another occasion for the Komanani program to outline how it's actually implementing the tender as much. And I think perhaps that would be of interest to the committee some other time. Now, the questions that have come around let me start with who funded these sexual activities. It's government funded. As I said, that the trust which was meant or is meant to finally fund the activities of SANAC was awaiting the finalization of SANAC, because its proper mandate is to implement a SANAC activity, so it couldn't start now funding activities when that SANAC is not yet constituted and says these are the activities that are adopted by all. So it fell upon government to actually lead the restructuring of SANAC and fund all these activities. So government has been funding the activities of these sectors, the meetings of these sectors. The cost I can't give offhand, because we have to actually then do a whole range of calculation of what it has cost us so far in relation to restructuring SANAC. But cost must be also looked at in relation to the cost of not having done that, in relation to many other issues. Now let me correct perhaps what might have been a misrepresentation on my part or a misunderstanding. The minister does not chair the Global Fund or is a member of the Global Fund. Not at all. I said that previously SANAC was also responsible as the country coordinating mechanism, what is called the CCM, by the Global Fund, of the Global Fund, because the Global Fund insists that any proposal that comes to it must come from a country coordinating mechanism, which is a partnership between government and civil society. So Stanak, the previous one, acted in that capacity, which meant that the deputy president would sit and chair a meeting to discuss budgets and proposals from each and every province and each and every organization that would be going to the Global Fund. We thought that was not an efficient way of doing things in the SANAC context. So SANAC established what is called the National Resource Mobilization Committee, which is chaired by the Minister of Health. But it consists of the same members of SANAC, one member from each of those sectors, each one of them, the women, the children, government, is it? About six of them. You know, I think it's grouped together, private sector, people with living with AIDS, and so there are about six or seven for it to be efficient as much. Now, so it's actually a committee consisting of government and civil society, just to put it that way. Now, it is this committee that actually has dealt, first of all, with the Global Fund issues. And as I said, it has met once to deal with the Global Fund issues. Now, with regard to the fundraising of SANAC, the meeting of the 10th is supposed to also look at the rules of the game with regard to that fundraising, so that then the question as to which donation to accept or not accept, which donor fund to approach or not approach for what reason, would actually be determined by SANAC itself, and this committee would simply then implement the decisions that would have been taken there. So it's not the minister who decides alone that we'll go to this funder or we won't go to that funder, etc. For SANAC purposes, it is actually SANAC itself. SANAC will decide what areas need to be funded and how. And how are we going to approach these donors so that we rationalize their involvement. And if SANAC says, for example, that we will say to the donors, these are the areas, and you can come in to offer, and we'll have a meeting with them once where they all agree to offer on certain areas, and then we see how they fund that. Then that's going to be the procedure. But that procedure has not been determined yet, except for the procedure which we already know of the Global Fund, because that procedure is already known. And we know how the Global Fund decides that. What influenced NAC? That's as simple as that. Dr. Kundu is here. Like any civil servant, Dr. Kundu has the right to decide when to actually move on. At the moment, she hasn't decided that, so she's still here. But I wouldn't want us to take the right away from Dr. Kundu to decide what she wants to do with her career, simply because there's some pressure, both from the point of view that if she decides either way or the other, then there will be some kind of outcry. I think it's unfair on her as an individual. She has the right to choose what she wants to do. Thank you.
All these activities of SANA that we are talking about will rely much on funding. I'm sure I'm also worried just to get clarity when it comes to funding. The DG, I think, has alluded to funding all these free activities to the implementation of SANAC plans by the government. Then one understands that from the 10th of September, a possibility may arise that certain plans may have to be rolled out. Now, what I wanted to know is SANAC having financial resources to be able to start from the 10th of September? If SANAC is not healthy enough, will then the department carry on until SANAC actually finds its footing in terms of financial resources. The other question that I just wanted to check was with respect to the SANEC Trust trustees. Are they still in play? Are they still relevant in terms of any guidelines that have actually provided for the establishment of the trust, given the time that has elapsed and all these other activities that have arisen to revise SANEC? Are those trustees still relevant? Are they still in place and still available to continue to serve the trust? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. Maybe one needs to appreciate the fact that the restructuring of SANEC in May 2006 will actually bring totally a new hope to the people of this country. And I should think all of us, we hope that will happen at the end of the day. But I just want to understand or clarity, DG, as to whether in all structures that you have just mentioned, maybe in amplifying the question of Honorable Madumisi, as to whether the PACs are in place right now in all 9 provinces, the DACs are there in all the districts, the LECs are there in all these municipalities, what is the progress as for now from all those structures? And lastly, one is tempted to maybe to ask a question around this global fund vis-a-vis SANEC Trust. Because normally when we receive a financial report, there is an area whereby a global fund is appearing on a financial report. I just want to know, because in any way, earlier on you have mentioned that because of the dysfunctionality of the trustee board or whatever, there's never been any fund to SANEC Trust and the like. Now, I just want to know as to whether this global fund in any way has assisted somehow on issues of dealing with HIV and AIDS. I know that maybe some other issues can be, the global fund can assist in dealing with. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I must apologize for being late. I would like to know, in the time of the existence of the old SANEC to the time of the launch of the new SANEC, what programs that were successful with your old SANEC were you able to take forward? Because I note that we are now waiting for the meeting on the 27th of August to confirm terms of reference for one particular substructure. Now, surely at the launch, that would have already been done. Why would you need to confirm it at a further meeting? Why would you look at policy implications? Because there has to be, or you know, some kind of continuity, some kind of progress that was made in the old SANEC that could possibly be carried through. I'm just looking for the continuity section. Now, with the new SANEC being launched, obviously the problem was that not all civil society sectors were represented, and I think a decision was taken that it would be multi-sectoral, and you all facilitated the process. Now, looking at membership of SANEC, you have government and you have the non-government sector. May I ask whether any opposition political parties are included in the composition of SANEC? And if so, to give us the details. If not, can you tell us why opposition political parties are excluded and what is the political thinking behind this? And then my third question, about 3 or 4 weeks back, the World Bank expressed its concern at the fact that it had offered funding to assist with the rollout program, antiretrovirals and so on and so forth, and that the Department of Health in South Africa had refused that funding. If you could give us clarity. And then 2 last questions. Is it possible to have a full list of your non-government sector? You've got men, you've got women, you've got professionals, but it's meaningless if you don't give me which organization is it? People living with AIDS, is it, you know, NACWA, is it the Treatment Action Campaign? I'm sure you have a full list of that. And then who are some of the donors? Are they pharmaceutical companies, you know, foreign aid? Perhaps to give us more specifics around that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I start from the right and I'll go left? Because I want to end on the left. With regard to the list of donors, let me start by saying there are no donors at the moment for the new SANAC and this implementation program. Just to underline, I said that the only coordination at the moment at the resource level is in relation to the Global Fund. The individual sectors may have donors. We don't know at the moment. What SANAC will do is to say, as SANAC, this is the way we are going to approach donors. These are the donors we will approach for this reason and that reason. And that's what's still going to happen. So I can't provide a list of donors at this stage because there are no donors except the Global Fund, because we have worked with the Global Fund in the previous. Perhaps also to link it to continuation. There is a continuity in that the Global Fund, CCM, SANAC continues to do that work, and that's the first part of your continuity. There are all sorts of other parts of continuity. I said the implementation of this program hasn't stopped on the ground. And if, as the chair said, the committee would like details on that, we can actually come at some stage to talk about details of implementation. So implementation hasn't stopped, and therefore what was being implemented previously, which is actually correct. The prevention program, for example, just by way of example, it comes from the previous, it has been enhanced by this, but the things that were being done before, condom use, and are still there. They continue to actually be done jointly. Even events like the World AIDS Day, for example, and the Candlelight Day commemorations that have happened, were happening from the previous SANAC, and they continue to happen as such. But we didn't get into those details because we're talking here about the actual progress of SANAC in relation to the that's the brief. Now, with regard to the World Bank concern, I think that was actually answered very well by the Treasury. The Department of Health doesn't deal with fundraising of whatever sort, or even borrowing money of whatever sort as a country. That's a country responsibility led by the Treasury. And therefore, we don't know where this comes from that we refuse money from the World Bank. We couldn't refuse any money from the World Bank if we had nothing to do with money to be raised from the World Bank. And the Treasury did answer that in that article very clearly as to why we as a country must be actually given a choice to decide who to go to for money, especially if it's a borrowing issue. Especially if it's a borrowing issue. And therefore, that's a Treasury issue, and perhaps at some point the Honourable Member may ask for more clarity from the Treasury. From our side, we can't refuse money that we are not responsible to raise in relation to the World Bank. We have no relationship with the World Bank from that kind of an engagement. Now, it's interesting that the question says opposition political parties. Presupposing that the party that is not in opposition is also a member. There is no membership of any political party, opposition or otherwise, in this structure at all. This is not you know, first of all, the rationale is that Parliament, which also has all these political parties, like it's happening now, continues to have the responsibility for supervision of all structures, including SANAC. And therefore, it can't be a player and a referee at the same time. And therefore, the membership of SANAC is actually based on civil society and government, both accounting to Parliament. And therefore, you cannot have membership of political parties that are supposed to also ask questions like the questions that you are asking now about the same structure that they actually sit in. So that's the rationale, that we keep that separation of power as a very important tenet of our democracy, that let Parliament continue to have the oversight without having a conflict of interest in that kind of matter. So that's why no opposition political party, nor any other party in another form, maybe the ruling party, is actually a member of this. With regard to the program, I've alluded to this, but let me specifically deal with what is said there. First of all, I think the Honourable Member will appreciate that when you are dealing with a whole range of sectors, that's the flourishing of ideas that cannot be summarized in how things should have been done, because the sectors themselves agree that now we must launch this process at the highest level while we continue the processes of confirming the other things that we still need to confirm. So in principle, in broad terms, the structures were given a very clear sense of what they are about, but they had to actually then come to terms with what are their terms of reference, and for that to be confirmed by the high-level structure. That's an agreement of all sectors. It's not just government deciding we're going to, you know, impose a set of terms of reference. There was an agreement that would be done. And when it says policy implementation, there are all sorts of policies that are in place. Others that still need to be addressed, because there are issues that arise from here in terms of which are policy issues that committee has to actually engage with in terms of how we take them forward in policy formulation. So we can't say those should have been resolved a long time ago. We'll always be developing policy as the circumstances change in the area of HIV and AIDS. So that's what is happening. With regard to the standard class, first let me start by saying, because I think this is the first question. Initially, the trust was initiated by a donation from government in order to start the trust. So government actually donated some funds into the trust for purposes of, and these are the funds that the Auditor General has kept on saying, but you've got the funds, they are accumulating interest, but they are not using them in terms of the implementation. And what we are saying now is, now those funds would be ready to finance the activities of SANAC immediately after this, but obviously they will not be enough because they can finance the activities, the coordination of meetings and the support for all the things that we are saying, which are more SANAC related. But funding the actual implementation plans of the various sectors, they may go to some way to fund elements of that. But that's why there is a need for a resource mobilization committee to continue to supplement those funds that are there. Currently, I think we sit at what, 34 million, if I'm not mistaken, of that trust, just to then run the affairs of SANAC. Remember, government is committed to ensuring that it pays for the secretariat, the management of that. And so that is already covered by the budget of government. Now, that links to the issue of the global fund. The trust, as I said, does have its own funds. The issue of the global fund was that the proposals for the global fund, once the global fund has approved whatever project, then the national treasurer was the conduit for the funds from the global fund to whatever structure. It could actually be the province of KwaZulu-Natal, or it could be some organization or a collecting of organizations that are actually having an approved project by the Global Fund. So those funds didn't go through the trust. They go through the country processes, and there's an agreement that the country focal point, for example, in this case for the flow of funds is the National Treasury. So that we would actually report only on the processes of those funds, but the National Treasury would be able to say, in the books, we received so much money from the Global Fund, and it was actually sent to so-and-so. And then we would oversee the implementation of those business plans. So the two are not linked, and even now they're not going to be linked. We're just saying that the same resource mobilization committee for the trust would also function as the conduit for processing the global fund proposals through to SANAC. But the flow of funds still flows through the national treasury, not through the trust itself, particularly for the global fund. With regard to the structure of the provincial and district level, that's an outstanding matter, because when we started looking at the restructuring of SANAC, there was an agreement that we would have to finish the process at national level. And then that SANAC could discuss itself whether and how this issue would be addressed at provincial, district, and local level, particularly because there are variations. In some places, there is legislation that establishes these structures in a particular way. In other provinces, there is no legislation. And when you then have to actually come with a national umbrella approach, you have to have a kind of sense of agreement whether you're going to legislate these structures across the board or not legislate them, and what you are legislating or what you are not legislating, etc., etc. So that conversation was suspended until the national structure itself felt confident that it would be able to actually discuss that issue in a more representative manner with the relevant provinces, because some of them have laws that say this structure shall be chaired by so and so, and it shall be, this is how it's going to be structured. So you can't then go and prescribe on another legislator how you must structure your structure unless they agree with it. So that issue is still an outstanding issue for SANAC to discuss, how to take forward that level. Now, with regard to the trustees, yes, they are still there. They are relevant only insofar as we have this, what I may call the caretaker position. Because as I said on the previous occasion, that we were trying to ensure that this structure, the trust, does not actually have our political office bearers also being trustees, because there's a kind of conflict there. They have to then account to the accounting office of the director general and trustees of this particular trust. But we couldn't actually change trusteeship if we want to keep the trust until we finalize the structure, so that structure decides who's actually going to constitute this trust. Of course, with government ensuring that the fiduciary responsibilities are there. So, in a caretaker sense, yes, they are still there. But as soon as the processes of deciding on the structures of SANAC are there, there are proposals that we're already making about how we actually restructure the whole of the trust such that there is representation of the SANAC, of SANAC people in the SANAC trust. And therefore, you get away from the situation we have now, which has the deputy president as the chair of the trust, so that if that trust has some kind of problem, then the deputy president has to ask to the director general, what are you doing about A, B, and C? And that doesn't make sense. So that's in the caretaker sense. Now, I've spoken about the financial resources of the trust and the fact that they are going to breach. I think they are enough for the work of the trust, of SANAC. But with regard to the implementation of the programs within each one of those sectors, that's why we're going to go into a fundraising mode for the sectoral plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on slide, on page 7, the last slide. I don't know, perhaps it slipped my mind, maybe I didn't hear it properly. Here it says that technical assistance was given to sectors, but only two sectors submitted. So I see here the meeting is going to be on the 27th. Are those sectors going to be represented, or have they already perhaps tried to do something? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. DJ, thank you very much for your informative presentation. I just want to check whether, if one is appointed to serve as a member of SANAD, is there a training or workshop that is being offered to empower those people so that they can be able to deliver on their mandate? Thank you.
That the revitalization of this SANEC really, really is long overdue, but we're glad that you've started something. In your presentation, you mentioned that there are departments that are part of SANEC, and then you said you added two, but you mentioned public works, and then you left the other ones, which we didn't hear. What is it exactly? The second question is with regards to the challenges. Seeing that we have noted, you have noted as a department, that these are really two challenges that you think the SANEC is going to face. Is there any program that we can work on it to make it a point that we address these challenges? Thank you.
Thanks, Jefferson. It's just a follow-up, and maybe that the DG has actually answered my question, but it raises a follow-up. Given the status of this particular program that we are talking about, one then is tempted to ask, should the sectors, all the relevant sectors, fail to fundraise in time to ensure that they continue with the implementation, will there be interim measures from the government? Thanks, I think that's a short answer.
I just want to find out from the DG, with the on page 8, your second bullet, the capacity to implement and monitor and evaluate, how are you going to turn around that challenge?
Thank you very much. The other question is the thank you very much, DG.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the sectors, I think we have actually been assisting those sectors that have asked for technical assistance in the development of their implementation plan. Some of them, you must recall, have not been organized in a particular way. For example, if you take the men's sector, it's a new emerging group that we still need to organize. If you take, for example, the arts and culture, that area, it's not even organized for that matter. They are asking us to convene a meeting, because if any one of them convenes it, there is a credibility issue. So they ask government to convene their meeting so that they can actually properly represent it. There may be other sectors in relation to that. So a lot of work has been. When we say technical assistance, it's not just about the implementation plan. It's been about organizing the sector and conferences and making sure that they have they've contacted the proper people. Even now, we still have contemplations about whether it's the right people that were in the correct meetings to elect the correct people, because some people say they were left out. If you look at the women's sector, for example, there is an ongoing kind of saga around that. Unfortunately, we are only there to facilitate, not to decide which organization will be invited and which one not to be invited. But we insist that it must be comprehensive. But on the implementation plan itself, The others are working on them, and I think that is why we said, first let's have this meeting of the program implementation committee to check which others, other than the two that simply indicated in the last meeting, that they are ready. Which others will be ready? Almost all of them said they will be ready to present something on the other, because these are just overview 10-minute inputs that they're going to give us documentation on. So they will all, in a way, I guess, be ready by Monday, because they have been working on this for some time. Just that the two I referred to are the ones that confirmed in a meeting that they'll be ready for the presentation on the 10th. But it doesn't mean that the others won't do the same on the 27th. I'm sure we'll have compiled a list of all of them by the time we get to the 10th. Now, whether they have workshops, I think it's one of the issues that SANA would have to look into, because part of the issue of the previous SANA was indeed the question of, which I think we're already seeing creeping into this current SANA. You see, one thing that we were trying to do was to separate strategic leadership from nitty-gritty programmatic fight. You see, we fight about whether that hospital should be accredited or not accredited for one thing or the other. Then you elevate that into a big SANAC crisis, because SANAC should be giving an overview of the strategy and direction. That is why we are hoping that that's a leadership structure. Then you leave all these program people outside there, because what they tend to do is to bring their fights with the Department of Health or Social Development, elevate it to a SANAC issue. The problem we're having now is that the people that are appointed by this sector have not followed that same kind of principle in some instances. Because the same people who say they are in the leadership are the same people who are also program people who are coming into the program structure. So we're going to find that same problem, that we won't be able to distinguish between a cat and dog fight, between the Department of Health and some stakeholder, and the strategic direction of the country on certain issues. So I think it's an issue we would need to consider so that we can be able to make those distinctions. But we assume that sectors train their people to represent the sector as such. It's an assumption that needs to be made. I'm sorry, I said there may be one or two other additional ministers. I know of one, for example. But there may be others. What I meant was the principle of co-option is actually possible. I know already they've done one, which is the Minister of Public Works. With regard to the challenges that was put, I tried to allude to the fact that at the same time as we are identifying them as challenges, we are trying to address them. For example, on the delays in the preparation, I think what I'm saying is the challenge has been the delay. So it's a historical fact. Now all of them are more or less in place, let's put it that way. But it's been a challenge to get them to do these things. So in other words, the challenge is that some of these sectors, even though we agree on the time frame at the level of SANAC, they won't do these things. And then they'll come back and say there's no progress in SANAC, when in fact there is a very clear agreement about what needs to be done and what they need to do in relation to that. The issue of the capacity to implement and monitor and evaluation implementation, I think it's a general issue, Honorable Member. It's a general issue. If you look at the NGO sector, if you look at government on the ground, you'll find that there are challenges of staffing, or of people who are project managers, people who actually know how to deal with these things. And from a government point of view, we have a program that is trying to actually deal with the issues of capacity at all levels. First in numbers, just in sheer numbers, to ensure that our part of the program is implemented and correctly. We have training programs for education, for educators, for example, for health workers, etc., etc., etc. Also, I think in the NGO sector, we have funding to fund those NGOs to build the capacity to implement, both by social development and by ourselves, and by education for that matter. But that challenge is an ongoing challenge that we are all faced with, that we must always address. The one of monitoring and evaluation is the challenge that we are identifying, because it's a new issue. I mean, for the first time in this particular SANAC, we've put in and built in the NSP and within SANAC itself an MNE framework. And therefore, we'll have to actually find that capacity to actually do that MNE in a manner that actually would give us concrete, tangible information for planning and implementation. And that indeed is going to be a challenge, because the general challenge of MNE in the country also, people who have the capacity to draw data and analyze and be able to then say, this is what is happening in this program in a particular manner. They are few and far between. So we have a program to address both at the government level, but also supporting the NGOs. But I think SANAC itself would then have to adopt its own program of capacity building for sector in terms of implementation. Once we know what the challenges are within particular sectors in terms of implementation. Which brings me to the funding issue. Most of the sectors, by the way, have their own funding. If you take the business sector, they're going to fund it. Labor, whatever program they're going to fund it themselves. The NGO sector, whatever program they're going to fund it themselves, except in certain instances of specific NGOs that they might want to be supported. But they have a whole range of possibilities. So most of these sectors, there are very few where in fact they will depend largely on SANAC. For example, the youth sector. That sector may actually be one of the sectors that is very critical, but we find it difficult to have the capacity to mobilize the resources to do what it wants to do. So that sector would have to be assisted in more than perhaps the business sector. So I don't want to give an impression that come day one, their implementation plans, there's no funding. Actually, almost 60 or 80% of those implementation plans would have had some funding on the other. But government, in its own implementation plan, would have the funding. Business, labor, all those sectors, including sectors like the media, for example, they have a program of implementation, and they have their own funding to actually fund those. It's only strategic sectors that, in fact, may not have the capacity that will have to be able to support. So part of the exercise is to say, here's an implementation plan, here's the funding that we have, this is the funding gap, and we hope to get it from this way and that way. But so that also, even within SANAC, the other people who have funding may say, we would like to partner with you to fund that program. So there's also that internal co-funding anyway. But I don't think that would actually cripple the program at its launch or start or implementation as such.
Thank you very much, CG. Are there any other questions? I see none. Just to understand, CG, so you are saying that at a high level, structure will be the president's senior people of that particular issue. And currently, the structure is not confirmed. Will that be right? In terms of the incumbents in the structure.
Some
have not been confirmed.
Yeah, they'll be confirming on the 10th.
Okay. Yeah. But in terms of the actual leadership, it has not really designated as to...
Oh, yes, yeah. What?
The only designated person is the chairperson, who's the deputy president. But there was a decision that the deputy chairperson would come from civil society. Now, that has not been confirmed. There are proposals, but there is no confirmation yet.
Thank you very much. I will take it. There are no other questions. Once again, thank you, DG. Thank you, Dr. Mundu. Thank you, Mrs. Nene. And your entire team, DG, for your presentation. The meeting is ended. Thanks. Sorry, just for a second. The message is reaching. It will be lunch at 1 o'clock at Max Building. You all know where Max Building is. lunch 1 o'clock it must be checked.
I want to see if you can get a little bit of 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 a little bit of